All right, good morning, everybody. Wednesday, November 24th, 1116, Chem 12B, and we're going to talk aromaticity this morning. So let me start a screen share. Get my iPad up and running. And we'll go to lecture portion. So this moves us back out of spectroscopy, back into the chemistry. And aromaticity is one of my favorites. I say that about all of the subjects. They're all my favorite. They're just, every time you dig into something, it's so fascinating what you find as you start digging into these subjects. And we have this preconception of what aromaticity is. As we were speaking about during the lab, Reto asked, you know, is aromaticity something that smells good? Aromatic, and that aromatic, we have absconded with that term to mean the something that smells good. And in the beginning, that's sort of what that term meant, but the term has taken on a different meaning, and it doesn't mean something that smells good. And in fact, many of these compounds do not smell good at all. So aromaticity has nothing to do with odor. So something that is aromatic has nothing to do with smell. And in fact, when we look at aromatic, when we think of aromatic, we think of benzene. And benzene has been the one molecule that we go back to over and over again for something that is aromatic, that this is an aromatic group. And so we could say benzene, or we could say a benzyl group in general as being an aromatic group. And we've known now for a while that these groups, benzene, I'm not going to pull the hydrogens in there, that these groups demonstrate aromaticity. They demonstrate something that is aromatic. But we've never really understood what that aromatic actually means. And so what does it mean to be aromatic? Aromatic is a special type of stability. So groups that are aromatic are more stable than molecules that are not aromatic. And one of the ways that we can look at that and verify that is that if we take a double bond and we do a combustion analysis on that double bond, and we take and we add hydrogen to it, we can hydrogenate it through the addition of hydrogen. And in so doing, we can take it down to its alkane. And we can measure the energy of hydrogenation. And we can calculate how much energy that is. And if we take a molecule that has two double bonds in it, and we take them and make them non-conjugated, then what happens is when they are not conjugated, the amount of energy that comes out of this is like two times the energy of the first hydrogenation. So if we look at this and we say that this is energy of alkene, then this is going to be two times that energy. Now, interestingly, if you conjugate them and you put those two double bonds together, then when you hydrogenate this and add in the hydrogen, the amount of energy that comes out is actually less than the amount of energy that came out of the other two. So these two, the double bond and the non-conjugated, this is a specific amount of energy. We'll call it energy alkene. This is two times that amount of energy, so it's exactly twice. But when I conjugate it, this is less than twice. Which means that this conjugated system is more stable than unconjugated. Less energy actually comes out. Well, when we take an aromatic ring system, we would think that an aromatic ring system would be three times this amount of energy that would come out. But in actuality, what happens is it's not three times. It's a lot less than three times. And so when we take an aromatic ring system, even though it's three alternating double bonds, and we hydrogenate it, and we hydrogenate it down to cyclohexane, there is a lot less energy, much less. Than three times the alkene. What's going on there? There we go. Wrong pin. And that much less has to do with the stability of aromaticity, and that aromatic molecules are much more stable than their component parts would indicate, that they have the three alternating double bonds. So the question is, why are they more stable? And then what does that mean? What does that extend to? So when we start looking at aromatic molecules, we find that aromatic molecules have certain things that they must meet in order to be aromatic. Number one, they must be a ring. Number two, they must be flat. Number three, they must be fully conjugated. Number three, that fully conjugated, I'm going to put in a subpart there. They are all sp2 or sp hybridized. In other words, no sp3. That's what we mean by fully conjugated. So fully conjugated, all of the atoms are sp2 or sp hybridized, no sp3. And the last part that they have to meet is that they have to meet a restriction that they have 4n plus 2 pi electrons. Where n is an integer value, zero, one, two, so on. So they must meet a certain number of pi electrons, 4n plus 2 pi electrons, in order for the system to be aromatic. And then these other restrictions here, the ring, the flat, the fully conjugated, these are all a component that taken together really imply fully conjugated. They cannot be conjugated unless they are flat. They cannot be conjugated unless they are a ring. And they cannot be conjugated if they contain any sp3 atoms. So it's really these two components of being conjugated and having a specific number of pi electrons, 4n plus 2 pi electrons. And so this 4n plus 2, if we look at n value, and we look at the value of 4n plus 2, which is the number of pi electrons, when n is 0, this is 2. When n is 1, this value is 6. When n is 2, this value is 2 times 4 is 8, plus 2 is 10. We can go to 3, 12, 14. So these are the number of possible electrons in a system for a system to be aromatic. Now, it can't just have these numbers of electrons, 2, 6, 10, 14. It must also meet the other restrictions. It must also be a ring. It must be flat. It must be fully conjugated. All of those things must be true. But then we can start talking about systems and whether or not a system meets these things. So let's take a six-membered ring system. In a six-membered ring system, the system is entirely flat. It's a ring. It is fully conjugated. So in that, all the atoms are sp2. And when we look at how many pi electrons it has, if we count up the double bonds, it has 2, 4, 6. This has 6 pi electrons. So we're flat, we're a ring, we're fully conjugated, 6 pi electrons. This system is aromatic. We could take a look at some other types of molecules and we can ask, are they fully aromatic? So let's take an oxygen with a five-membered ring system and two alternating double bonds. And you should also know that when you look at this system, that this system is flat and that one of the pi electrons sits here and the other pi electron sits here, so that the oxygen in this system is sp2 hybridized. And this is an sp2 hybrid that one pair of electrons sits in, and the other system here is a pi electron or a p orbital. And so we can go through the system and we can say, well, what does this system match up with all of these things? Is it flat? The answer is yes. Is it a ring? Yes. Is it fully conjugated? Well, the fully conjugated, each one of these orbitals sits here and the system is fully conjugated in that the electrons that are in these pi electrons are all sp2 hybridized and all fully allowed to move throughout the ring. So yes, it's fully conjugated. And how many pi electrons does it have? So when I go through and I count the pi electrons, I count the pi electrons that are inside the system. One of these electrons sits there. So that's 2, 4, 6. And then this last pair that is sitting here, that one is outside the system. And so we don't count the pair of electrons that are outside of the pi system. And so this does have 6 pi electrons. And as having 6 pi electrons, this fits in with our number of electrons. And this system is aromatic. And will demonstrate stability greater than a molecule that is linear of similar structure. So This leads to all kinds of interesting information now, questions about molecules. So we've shown now a six-membered ring, a five-membered ring. What about a five-membered ring that is a carbocation? So as a carbocation, this system would be flat. It would have an empty p orbital that's here, the hydrogen extending out, the pi bonds. So this system is flat. It is fully conjugated. It's all sp2. It's in a ring. So we're ring, we're flat, we're fully conjugated. But how many pi electrons does it have? Because it's a carbocation, it has no pi electrons in the carbocation. It only has four pi electrons. This system is not aromatic. But if I change that and I look at the carbanion, now normally carbanions are hybridized to be sp3 hybridized. But in this case, because of the aromaticity, the molecule rehybridizes and puts the lone pair in an empty p orbital. So the system is a ring, it is flat, it's fully conjugated. And now it's got six pi electrons. So now we've got 2, 4, 6. This system does match the six pi electrons, and this system is aromatic.
So where does the extra electron go here?
Where does the extra electron go? I have another way of explaining that. I'm going to get to that in a minute, and we'll look at another way of showing you why this is aromatic. But first, I want to just be able to apply the rules and to look at something. And so we see that it's not about how big the ring is. And in fact, it can be a six-membered ring or it can be a five-membered ring. These can be things that are ions. They can be negatively charged. We haven't seen one that could be positively charged yet. But I could say, what about this molecule? Is this aromatic? So what we're seeing is this is not about resonance. I think what I'm trying to show is that resonance does not play a role in aromaticity. So the fully conjugated usually aligns with resonance, but we're seeing molecules now that are fully conjugated. And even though they're fully conjugated, they're not aromatic. So this molecule, fully conjugated, completely flat. So this is a ring, it's flat, it's fully conjugated. But how many pi electrons? It's got four pi electrons, which is not a number that fits within our aromaticity. This is not aromatic. What about this molecule? Is it a ring? Yeah. Is it flat? Well, these are carbocations, and carbocations are sp2 hybridized. So in that sense, if I think about this as empty p orbitals and that guy as a pi bond, and those are empty, then yeah, this is flat. Is it fully conjugated? Well, fully conjugated would mean that they're all sp2. So sp2, 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 sp2. Yeah, it's fully conjugated. How many pi electrons does it have? There's no electrons in these two. So there's only the two electrons that are in the pi bond. So this has two pi electrons. So I go back up to my rules and I say, how many electrons does it need to have? 2 or 6? Or 10 or 14, it does have 2 pi electrons. This thing is aromatic. This molecule will be more stable and will demonstrate stability that is greater than other molecules with 2 positive charges in it, and does demonstrate what we call aromaticity. So what about this molecule? Is it a ring? Yes. Is it flat? Yes. Is it fully conjugated? This carbon here is sp3. And so, no, it's not fully conjugated. We could do a full stop. This is not aromatic. What about this one? Is it a ring? Yes. Is it flat? Yes. Is it fully conjugated? Yes.
Yeah.
Pi electrons? So it's got 2 in the double bond and 2 in the lone pair. So when we put a negative charge there, the negative charge implies that there's a lone pair that's present. So this would be 4 pi electrons. And as such, that's the wrong number. This is not aromatic. What about the carbocation? It's a ring, it's flat, it's fully conjugated. And it's got 2 pi electrons. Yes, aromatic. So what is it then? Why is this number of pi electrons important? And what is it that makes one molecule not aromatic and the other molecule aromatic just simply by the number of electrons that it has? How does the electrons relate into it? How does the number of electrons in the pi system affect aromaticity? So one of the ways of understanding a system like this is when we look at benzene. Benzene has a system of molecular orbitals. And the number of molecular orbitals is determined by the number of atomic orbitals that come into it and the number of hybrid orbitals. And so at some point in this molecule, we have what's called the barycenter. And this is the highest occupied molecular orbital and the lowest unoccupied molecular orbital. And we have the bonding orbitals and the antibonding orbitals. The bonding orbitals are all occupied with electrons. And the antibonding ones are unoccupied. It turns out that the most important orbitals to look at are the orbitals that make up the pi system. And so when we look at the pi system, if we take a look at how many carbons are contributing pi orbitals into this, these are the highest occupied molecular orbitals, by the way, that I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 carbons that are participating in the pi system. So I have 6 p orbitals, and those 6 p orbitals contribute to make 6 molecular orbitals. And those 6 molecular orbitals are the 3 that are antibonding and the 3 that are bonding. And this system here is the pi system. Notice that there are 6 electrons that fit into the 6 bonding orbitals, and then there are the 3 bonding orbitals, and then there are 3 antibonding that are unoccupied. This system can be approximated. So this is the most important part to look at. There are additional orbitals down below this that are sigma orbitals. And so these orbitals keep on going down below this, but we're not interested in those. And there are antibonding orbitals that are up above this, and we're not interested in those. We're interested in only the component that makes up the pi system and what that pi system looks like. And there's an approximation method for the level, the energy level of these orbitals. For finding the relative energies of the pi system. This is called Frost Circle. So the way Frost Circle works is what we do is we take the ring system and we orient the ring system with a point down. When the ring system is oriented with a point down, at every carbon juncture, we place an orbital. In the middle, we place the barycenter. And then we take how many electrons are in the system. And for a benzene ring, it is 6 pi electrons.
What do you put in the middle?
It's the dividing line between the bonding and the antibonding. So these,
right, but you called it something. What was
I called it? The barycenter, B-E-R-R-Y. Barycenter is what it's called.
That was not a joke. Okay.
No, that's what it's called. And these are the antibonding, and these are the bonding. And then we place the electrons into these orbitals. And what we find is that in this system, all of the bonding orbitals are occupied, and all of the antibonding orbitals are empty. And the pi star antibonding all empty. This configuration is an extremely stable configuration where the bonding orbitals are all full and the antibonding orbitals are all empty. We know that if we dump electron density into an antibonding orbital, that it destabilizes bonds. That's one of the ways that SN2 reaction works, is that when we dump electron density into the sigma star orbital in an SN2 reaction, it destabilizes the sigma bond and it causes the leaving group to leave, right? So dumping electron density into an antibonding orbital destabilizes the bonding orbital. And so the fact that all of the antibonding orbitals are empty and the bonding orbitals are full makes this a very stable configuration. What happens when I compare two molecules, one which is aromatic and one that is not aromatic, and I do it by Frost circle? So let's take a five-membered ring, for instance. Let's compare the five-membered ring with a positive charge versus the five-membered ring with a negative charge. So this is cyclopentadiene anion and cyclopentadienyl cation. And I want to do this analysis by Frost circle. So how many electrons does each system have? Well, the system here has 4 pi electrons and the system has 6 pi electrons. And when I draw Frost circle for this, I have to take and put a point down. So the analysis would be to take and put a point down and then a bonding or a an orbital at each one of the junctures of the carbons. So these are how the system looks, and then my division between bonding and antibonding for this system happens here. Where the bonding orbitals are above, there we go. So these are the pi star.
How'd you get this 2-3 split here?
I did.
Why did you know?
I have to give that to you for each of the systems. Each system is a little bit different in where that barycenter falls. But usually it falls within the 6 or the 2, the 6, the 10, the 14. That I'm trying to get a number of orbitals that are down here that are in the bonding that are either 2, 6, 10, 14. It's governed by that number. So now when I take and I put 4 pi electrons into this, there's 2, there's 4. Here's 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Okay, so these two systems clearly have something different going on in terms of their electron configurations, right? So the orbitals here that are on this ring, these two orbitals are degenerate, meaning that they come at the same energy level. So when I place electrons into these orbitals, I follow, is it Hund's rule? I think it's Hund's rule, where I don't pair the electrons unless I'm forced to, that the electrons, because of their negative charge, repel one another. And if there are degenerate energy levels, they are allowed to separate in order to lower the energy of the overall system, placing one electron in each degenerate energy level until such time as all the energy levels are half filled. And then I go back and I pair them. So what this is actually a diradical. And as a diradical, it's extremely reactive. The one on the right-hand side, though, is aromatic. It is all bonding orbitals are full. No electrons in pi star orbitals. This one is aromatic. And so that aromatic, that aromaticity, comes from a combination of having no electrons in the antibonding orbitals and having the bonding orbitals full. So again, I could take another example and I could show you with the three-membered ring system, cation and anion. So for this system, this has two pi electrons in the system, and the one on the right-hand side has four pi electrons. For this system, for Frost Circle, the system looks like this. Point down, orbital at each apex. And then the barycenter for these resides here, where the two electrons, and that makes these guys the pi star and the bonding. Pi star and bonding. With two pi electrons, the bonding orbital is full. But with four pi electrons, I pick up two electrons each in antibonding orbitals. And so this one is aromatic, and this one is a diradical, and is unstable. And so what we'll see is that it's not even noticed that the anion in the five-membered ring system was aromatic, the cation was not. It's the opposite in the three-membered ring system. The cation is aromatic and the anion is not. So it's not even about, is it a cation or is it an anion? It's about, does it have the right configuration of electrons? And it is the configuration of the electrons and molecular orbital theory that tells us whether or not a molecule is aromatic. So aromaticity is based on molecular orbital theory and about the electron configuration that tells us whether or not something is actually aromatic. So what happens when I have, there's a couple of questions now that we could ask. We could say, well, what happens when I have a heteroatom in the molecule or two heteroatoms in the molecule, right? So we already did the oxygen example. Let's maybe go to a nitrogen example. What happens when I have a five-membered ring system and a nitrogen in it? Well, normally, normal nitrogen takes on an sp3 configuration. Where this electrons that are in this orbital, this is an sp3 hybrid. But in the molecule that I've drawn on the left-hand side, we might expect that nitrogen to be sp3, but in reality, what happens is that nitrogen rehybridizes. And so hybridization is not a function of VSEPR theory. Hybridization is a function of stability, and the molecule will hybridize to whatever is the most stable configuration for that molecule. So when we look at the nitrogen here, what we see is that the nitrogen is actually trigonal planar, and the lone pairs sit not in a sp3 hybrid, but they sit in an actual p orbital. That allows this molecule to become flat. And once it becomes flat, then it becomes aromatic. And so now we could take this molecule and we could say, all right, well, five-membered ring system, you can include the nitrogen if you want in the five-membered ring system for the Frost circle analysis. The barycenter resides there, and there are six pi electrons, and this thing is aromatic. Now, what happens to this molecule when we do some acid-base reaction? So this molecule is aromatic. But if I add a proton to it and I protonate it, what happens to the aromaticity?
It fails now because it's like sp3 now.
That's right. Now this nitrogen is forced to be sp3. Conjugation is broken. And loss of aromaticity. That loss of aromaticity is a loss of stability. And that loss of stability means that this nitrogen has no desire to pick up that proton, which means that the pKa, the pKa of this guy, where it really, really wants to lose that proton, is extremely low. I need to look up what the pKa is on that guy. I don't think I have it here anywhere. This is pyrrole. This is the pyrrole cation. And the pyrrole cation has a pKa that is like, I don't know, I want to put it down around 4 or something. I want to put it close to like a carboxylic acid, much more acidic than what we would anticipate being for this molecule. So let me... Let me show you another one. I'm thinking now about a larger molecule. This one has the wrong number of electrons. I'm going back to see our system for electrons. I have to go all the way back up to the start. Where did I put that? Oh, okay. So 2, 6, 10, 14 are our possible number of electrons. The system that I've drawn now, which is an 8-membered ring system, if we take that 8-membered ring system, and this has 2, 4, 6, 8 pi electrons, we can take this thing and orient it so that we can get a point up. That's a little bit harder to do. I think I've done it.
So you put the line above the fold here too? Like above the center line?
Okay, so in this molecule, the barycenter would fall. That's a good question. Where does this actually fall? I think the barycenter here falls actually on the middle line. This one I don't do as often, but I think it falls here. And
what does it mean? Like it's plus an atom.
These are antibonding. So these are antibonding. these are what are called non-bonding, and these are the bonding. And so when we put the electrons into this system, 2, 4, 6, 8, we hit that di radical again. And so this one is not aromatic. But there's also another reason. There's also another thing that happens here with this molecule. And that is that when we look at this molecule, because it's got 8 atoms in the molecule, it tends to be floppier than other molecules. And it bends out of planarity. And when it bends out of plane, that breaks conjugation. And it breaks conjugation because these guys now act more like individual pi bonds. And you can see the arrangement of the pi bonds and how these guys have to orient perpendicular to the rest of the bonds. And what that does is that breaks the conjugation. So these guys are not conjugated now. Aromaticity is a lot about visualizing the orbitals and knowing what the orbitals look like. I wanted to take you to one more molecule, a nitrogen-containing molecule. Let me show you. Let's do a 5-membered ring. With 2 nitrogens in the 5-membered ring. One of the nitrogens has a proton, lone pair. The other one has a double bond and a lone pair. Is this molecule aromatic? Well, one of the things that we need to be able to do is we need to be able to look at the lone pairs and we need to ask, where do these lone pairs sit? What sort of orbital are those lone pairs in? And so if I can visualize that, here's the nitrogen with the hydrogen on it. There's that lone pair. Here's the nitrogen with the double bond. I gotta get that double bond in the right spot though. That double bond goes here. And then there's the other double bond. And this lone pair extends out that way. So I'm going to close up these bonds and make my molecule a little bit tighter. In the way that it looks. Okay, so what's going on here is that there is pi bonds. And that those pi bonds, if I go through and color them in, and I'll just pick one of the orbital colorations to color them in with. There's all the top ones. Here's all the bottom ones. And then here's this system that's out there. So what we see is that in here, there's 6 pi electrons that are conjugated. and this one, which is not conjugated.
Five or six?
So, good question. This pair, and that pair are the ones that are conjugated, and that is the one that's outside. So this is six pi electrons in the conjugated system. And when we take that five-membered ring system and place it with a point down and do the Frost circle analysis, what we find is that six pi electrons fills the bonding orbitals, and that this is aromatic. So here's another question. Taking everything that you've learned now, what happens if I take this five-membered ring system and I protonate it? Which nitrogen is going to protonate? There's two different lone pairs. Is it going to do this? Or is it going to do this?
The second one there seems more reasonable, right?
Right, so this is A and this is B. And we're saying that B seems more reasonable. Why does B seem more reasonable?
Because it's resonance stabilized that way?
Ah, but we're not in resonance anymore. So resonance isn't going to be a key here. Aromaticity is going to be a key. So we're in the aromatic chapter. Resonance does not apply within the aromatic chapter. Yes, resonance is a component, and we can look at resonance, but resonance isn't the guiding principle here. Aromaticity is the guiding principle. So we need to look at this from an aromaticity perspective. So in an aromaticity perspective, let me try to show it to you this way. These electrons in the pi bonds and the electrons in the lone pair are part of the pi system that make it aromatic. The electrons that are here are not part of the pi system and are not participating in aromaticity. So what has happened here is that these electrons are still there, but now the pi system only has four pi electrons, and we have now gone to an sp3 hybridized nitrogen, and we've broken the aromaticity. A is not aromatic. In B, we have six pi electrons, and the electrons that were used for the protonation were the ones that were outside of the aromatic system to begin with. This is still aromatic. And as such, this is more stable.
So no material changes. You don't care about those electrons anyway, no matter how they point. Like what they do, like if they're part of the hydrogen bond or not, it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter, right. So it's really about the electrons that are part of the pi system that are part of the aromaticity versus the electrons that are not part of the aromatic system. And so the aromatic system is so stable that breaking aromaticity costs you a tremendous amount of energy. And it just will not do that. It will try to retain aromaticity as much as it possibly can. So the system will always try to maintain aromaticity. And we need to look at it, and we need to be able to visualize the orbitals and see the orbitals in this and understand where they are and whether or not they're part of the pi system or outside of the pi system for aromaticity. And so there's lots of types of questions now that we can start to ask. Not only is a molecule aromatic, but you know, what is it that allows it to be aromatic, and what do chemical reactions do to it that may either gain aromaticity or lose aromaticity? So there's all kinds of really cool questions like this. Another question is, look at something like this. These are molecules that are called chalicenes. This molecule is a fairly stable molecule, but demonstrates an extremely high dipole. Looks completely nonpolar, but demonstrates a large dipole moment by experiment. Explain. Why would this demonstrate a large dipole moment? So what you have to do is you have to think, all right, what chapter am I in? I'm in aromaticity. So I'm looking for aromaticity. So only look for aromaticity. So think about, what is it that makes a molecule aromatic? And through resonance, can I make one or more of these rings look aromatic? So what we've seen is that we've seen that five-membered ring systems that have double bonds and a positive charge, or double bonds and a negative charge, that the negative charge represents the presence of a lone pair of electrons here, and that this one is not aromatic. And the one with the six pi electrons is aromatic. So it has to have the six pi electrons in order to be aromatic. And if you look at this, you can see within this system, you know, we're looking at the five-membered ring system here and the alternating double bonds. The question is, can I do something to this to make it look like that anion? And while resonance-wise, yes, what I can do is I can take that five-membered ring system and I can pull the electrons back from the double bond and place them on the specific carbon. And so what that does is that places a lone pair there, that becomes a negative charge. The other carbon becomes a cation. And now what winds up happening is the system functions like two different molecules. So this piece of the puzzle over here has six pi electrons and becomes aromatic. And this piece over here is a seven-membered ring system. And if I take and explore a seven-membered ring system, I have to put the point down. But in a seven-member ring system, the barycenter falls here. And that's 2, 4, 6. And that's what this system also has, 6 pi electrons. And this is also aromatic. And so the dipole moment in this molecule extends, wrong direction, extends this direction and demonstrates high aromaticity. And so it exists with a strong dipole moment because it really doesn't have that double bond there between the 5 and 7-membered ring systems. It really exists more as a cation and an anion, and has a permanent dipole moment in the molecule, a very high dipole moment, in order to make both sides aromatic. So the explanation is really in the aromaticity, in that this molecule can become aromatic by a rearrangement of the electrons in the system. And so while we typically would never draw anything with a cation and an anion right next to each other like this, that we would always draw it with that double bond, in reality, this system doesn't exist with a double bond there, because it's more stable without it. It's more stable as a cation and an anion because both sides of the molecule then become aromatic. So there are a lot of really cool things that aromaticity starts to tease out in stability of structure and molecules, and things that we just took for granted that were super stable bonds that are sigma bonds or pi bonds that always stay in the same place and are there because a bond is a bond is a bond. But when we get to aromaticity, no, not so much. Hybridization and bonding is a function of stability, which is a function of electronic configuration, which is a function of how stable, a stable configuration of those electrons, and that the system is always going to go to its most stable configuration. And that aromaticity affords us greater stability than other types of systems. So a lot goes into the aromaticity. Okay, so that's pretty much the lecture on being able to recognize an aromatic system. I'm trying to think if I left out anything. I'm going back and I don't think I've got anything that I left out that I wanted to hit, other than starting to look at some chemical reactions. So let me pick some chemical reactions to show you. Most of the time, when we take an aromatic molecule and we try to do a reaction such as bromination, we find that there is no reaction. That aromatic molecules are resistant to doing a reaction like this. Whereas if we had an alkene, and we did the Br2, we know that we get the bromination and that we get anti-addition. And it goes through the cyclic bromonium ion. But aromatics, we've always been told, don't touch aromatics, leave the aromatics alone because the aromatics don't react. Why don't they react? Well, the reason is they don't react because of their extreme stability. But aromatics can extend to bicyclic ring systems. And we can get a number of molecules that have inequivalent resonance structures. And because of these inequivalent resonance structures, what winds up happening is the molecule can react in ways that we may not have predicted before. So what do I mean by inequivalent resonance structures? Let me take and move the electrons in this system around. And if I move the electrons, that's not going to quite get it. I went the wrong direction. If I move that guy in over there, I've got to flip them all around. All right, start over. Let's go this way. Flip that one, flip that one, flip that one, that one, and that one. Now I'm okay. So I basically had to move them all. And so that guy goes there, 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 there. This one comes over here. This one comes over here. And that means I need to move this last one one more location over. So it looks like this ring can be aromatic, or this ring can be aromatic. But I can't get the center ring to be aromatic by resonance.
Does it take a lot of energy to switch from one to the other, or is that kind of like continuously happening?
It doesn't, because they don't really switch from one to another. I mean, we say that they're inequivalent resonance contributors, but in essence, the aromaticity sort of resides on the right-hand side and on the left-hand side, but not in the center one, that there's no ability to be able to get six electrons around the center and to have it be aromatic. So what does that mean then? How can I demonstrate that that is really true? One of the ways to demonstrate that that's true is through a chemical reaction. And let's choose a bromination. And that if I brominate this, the interesting thing that happens is that it brominates in the center ring, where the aromaticity can't happen. So the center ring will brominate this way across the ring, maintaining the aromaticity in both the left-hand sides and right-hand sides of the molecule. And so essentially what winds up happening is, mechanism-wise, in order to maintain the aromaticity, this guy reaches out and grabs the bromine in much the same way as we have always expected. In so doing, the electrons flip this direction, and what I wind up getting is the aromatic left-hand side and right-hand side. The bromine has gone there, and a carbocation exists here until the bromide comes in and attacks it, going to the next structure. And so what it does is it reacts in the center, because that's the fragile location that can never be aromatic on its own. Same sort of thing happens when we look at a different configuration. So this configuration if I brominate this system, it brominates in such a way as to retain as much aromaticity as it possibly can. So you look at it and you say, all right, I can see that this ring is aromatic. I can see that this ring is aromatic. This is my bond here that is really going to operate in a way that isn't aromatic. And so this molecule, when it brominates specifically as an anti-addition here across this double bond. preserving the aromaticity of the other two rings. And we see that for a number of different different reactions. Okay, so that's is a start of getting us into reactivity. What we do from here is in the next lectures, we go through a series of reactions that are review for aromatic groups. And we look at mainly the benzylic positions and reactions of benzylic positions. But then after all those reactions of benzylic positions, what we come back and look at is two reactions, one called a Birch reduction and the other one called electrophilic aromatic substitution. So next lecture, what we look at is a review of benzylic position, not reacting at the aromaticity. So those are all review reactions. We go through them very quickly. We have a reduction of aromatic systems. This is called a Birch reduction. That allows us to take an aromatic system and reduce it to make it non-aromatic. And we'll look at how that Birch reduction works. But then the major part is what's called electrophilic aromatic substitution. Electrophilic aromatic substitution. And this is really the big part. This is how we can actually functionalize aromatic ring systems and how we can add substituents. We can add substituents to those aromatic ring systems. And not only can we add them, but we can add them in very specific ways such that we can control the substitution pattern so that we can get substitution patterns where there are two groups that are ortho or two groups that are meta or two groups that are para, or we can put in three groups and we can work in the system and figure out how to get the substitution pattern that we want with three groups and how we can functionalize it. So there's all kinds of really cool ways that we can work with aromatic systems with this electrophilic aromatic substitution. And so that becomes the big component, the big synthesis component. And we use this more for synthesis. Of how do we functionalize aromatic ring systems? So that's where we're going with it. So number one, today was all about what is aromatic? How do we define aromaticity? And then reactions of aromatic systems and how we work with them. So that's where we're going. All right, that's the lecture today. Wish you guys all the best tomorrow. Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the weekend. And don't forget to go in and upload. We worked on that quiz. Go in and submit that quiz. Get that thing punched out and submitted in Canvas for the lecture. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, take care, you guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.